If you want to turn back to 2 John, may be useful for you to have it. I think it's 1229 in the Pew Bible. So this evening I want to speak on one of the most difficult things that I find in life, and possibly one of the most difficult things that you find, to hold together truth and love in a perfect balance. Holding together truth and love in a perfect balance. Over recent months, we've been looking at 1 John under the overall title of Reality Check. And we've been looking at a reality check in our lives, checking how we're doing, assessing ourselves in different aspects of life and witness, as set forth in 1 John. And I thought tonight and next Sunday evening, I would kind of round things off neatly in looking at 2 John and 3 John. 2 John takes some of the themes of 1 John, maybe not so much the theme of assurance, but certainly these themes of truth and love and walking in obedience to God and following His commands. That's very much in 2 John, and a sort of a PS to what John wrote in his earlier letter. You'll see at the beginning of 2 John, it begins the elder. And there's a little bit of debate in the commentaries about who this is. Some think it's not John the Apostle who wrote the Gospel of John and Revelation, but it was another elder, possibly called John. But most commentaries, and certainly most evangelicals, would say that this is the same John as we have in 1 John, the same John as in Revelation, the same John as in the Gospel. And certainly aspects of the language are very similar. Also, the other interesting thing is that it's addressed to the chosen lady. Now, who is the chosen lady? Again, two things are offered or suggested. One is that it is a famous lady in the church, maybe in a local church near Ephesus. Or John is using this term to refer to the church, a local church. And again, most commentators believe that it's the latter, that John is writing to a local church, possibly in the region of Ephesus, and he's using this this term. It's unusual, perhaps, and yet there are four good reasons why we can probably say that this is writing to a church and not to a person. The first is that elsewhere in the New Testament, the church is described as the bride of Christ in female terms. The church is always she, and so he's just continuing this idea. Also, you will find that in 2 John, he uses the second person plural. When he says you, he's not using the singular you, he's using a plural you, which would again suggest that he's writing to a group of people, to a congregation, to a local church. And then also we find, if you look at verse 5, he says, "Dear lady, we should love one another." This makes most sense when put in a church context, this idea of a congregation loving each other, loving one another. And again, finally, in verse 13, "The children of your chosen sister send their greetings." Again, it sounds more like another church, referring to another church as a sister church. So for those reasons, I'm inclined to agree with most of the commentaries that John here is not writing to an individual, to a famous lady in the church. He's writing to a local church itself. Now, the background to 2 John is really two things. One is an itinerant ministry. At this time of the church, in the early church, there were many teachers who were traveling around the region, visiting local prophets, teachers, and this is the background to this gospel. And John was worried that some of these itinerant teachers were bringing false teaching. They were bringing heresy. And so this is a letter about being discerning. He's warning the church, yes, to be loving, but also to be discerning in the truth. So that's the background to this. He's worried about heretics. And in particular, he's worried about Gnosticism. Now, you've heard us talk about Gnosticism before, and in 1 John, Gnosticism features. Let me remind you very briefly what Gnosticism was or what it said. Gnosticism said that the spirit and God was good, but matter, physical matter, the earth, you and me, are evil and are bad. And therefore, the Gnostics could not understand how a good God could step into an evil world and become evil matter in taking on human flesh. And so the Gnostics said it only seemed like Jesus was human. He was from God, but he was not a real human being. He did not have human flesh such as you and I have. So the Gnostics said spirit was good, matter was evil. Jesus only seemed to have a physical body. He did not actually physically die on the cross. And also the last kind of major part of this teaching is that the body, therefore, could be ignored. If the body was evil, if matter was evil, and we want to get to the higher levels of the spirit, well, then you ignore the body. And you can ignore the body in two ways. You can either become an ascetic, you fast and you beat your body and do all that sort of thing. Or, alternatively, the other end of the spectrum is you can pamper your body. And it doesn't really matter what you do with your body sexually. And you can indulge your body. Because the spirit and the body are just so far apart. So you see the dangers of this teaching. It's reducing the full humanity of Jesus as well as his deity. It's saying that God cannot really come into our world and deal with our sin. It's saying that it doesn't really matter what you do with your body. And you can see why John was so upset by this. So these traveling teachers, traveling prophets are going around, and they're coming from the culture of Gnosticism, which is a very strong culture in these days. And John was worried that many of the house churches were swallowing this teaching, this heresy. And within the context as house churches, what was meant to happen is that if these traveling teachers came, you were meant to show hospitality. You were meant to invite them in, and they were to stay with you for a day or two. You were to show them love. So the churches, wanting to show love and hospitality, were inviting in these teachers. They were allowing them to stay 2, 3, 4, 5 days. And John is saying, yes, it's nice to be loving, but we need the truth in there as well. You need this balance of truth and love, love and truth. So that's the background to 2 John. That's what's going on here. That's what he's writing about. Local churches, growing local house churches, being visited by these teachers, but they need to show discernment. And this tension is in the church. And this tension is in the church today as well. In fact, that tension is always in the church because there's always false teaching, there's always heresies circulating. And as Christians, we've got to be discerning. In general, Christians are nice people. We're known as nice people. We don't like to say to people, you're wrong. We encourage people. But the problem is, in our niceness, bad things can flourish. Heresies can flourish because we're nice and we don't want to upset the apple cart. And abuse can flourish in churches because we're nice people. And we suspect something may be going on, but we're too nice to raise an issue. And I don't need to say much more on that because we're well aware of that. So that's the danger, you see, of being too nice and of being too loving, because all kinds of stuff can flourish which should not flourish. Remember Jesus said in Matthew 10 and 16, you're to be as wise as snakes and as innocent as doves. And basically, in his very picturesque way, he's saying, bind together love and truth, as wise as snakes and as innocent as doves. Now, one of the early church documents, for those of you who have studied church history or theology, you will be familiar with a document called the Didache, D-I-D-A-C-H-E. And the Didache was an early church document. We're not quite sure who wrote it, but it was circulating around the churches around the same time as John wrote this letter, about the end of the first century. And the Didache deals with a number of things, from baptism to church order to elders and so on and so forth. But there's a couple of paragraphs which I'm going to read to you because they really help to understand this background as to why 2 John was written. So this wasn't written by an apostle. It's not in the Bible. It's an early church document. But it gives us a flavor of all that was going on at the time, and it helps us in our understanding of 2 John. So if you just bear with me, I just want to read a couple of paragraphs of this. Listen to anyone who comes to teach you good things. But if a teacher is led astray and teaches a different doctrine that undermines what you have been told, do not hear him. You should treat apostles and prophets as the gospel commands. Receive every apostle that comes to you as you would the Lord. But he must not stay more than one day or two if necessary. But if he stays 3 days, he is a false prophet. When an apostle leaves you, give him nothing except bread until he finds shelter. If he asks for money, he is a false prophet. Not everyone that speaks in the Spirit is a prophet, only those who live in the way of the Lord. Thus it is by their conduct that you can tell false prophets from true. Similarly, no prophet shall eat, and I'm not sure what this means, no prophet shall eat while he is in the Spirit. Not sure what that means. But if he does, he's a false prophet. Even if a prophet has been approved and found true and lives out the cosmic mystery of the church, if he does not teach you to do all that he does himself, you should not judge such a prophet. His judgment must be left to God. Receive everyone who comes in the name of the Lord. When you have tested them, you will know them, for you will be able to discern true from false. If the one who comes is a traveler, assist him as well as you can, offer him love, but he should not stay with you more than 2 days. If he has a craftsman who wishes to settle with you, let him work for his bread. If he has no trade, use your discretion to provide a way for him to live as a Christian among you, but not in idleness. If he will not do this, he is trading Christ for profit. Beware of such men. So the background to this, to say, is these traveling prophets, these teachers, many of them going around the churches, they were to be shown hospitality, but if they abused your hospitality, and if they asked for money, it was a sign that they were in it for something else, that they were false. So how do we properly treat people? How do we balance truth and love? John writes into the situation, and you will see in these opening verses that he really tries as hard as he can to balance truth and love. If you look at verse 1, he mentions to the chosen lady and her children whom I love in the truth. Then in verse 3, he talks about with us in truth and love. In verse 4, he says we should be, your children are walking in the truth. In verse 5, he says, I'm writing you a new command, but one you've had from the beginning. I ask that we love one another. And verse 6, this is love, that we walk in obedience to his commands. And at the end of verse 6, walk in love. So we've got this kind of ricocheting back and forth, truth, love, love, truth, love, truth. He wants to bind the two together. They're always to go together. True love is based on truth. True truth is based on love. James Boyce, in his commentary, says that Christians are bound to other Christians primarily by the special bond of truth, and this is the foundation of genuine Christian love. So we've got love and truth here, but then as he moves on into the letter in verse 7, He has a very jarring word. He says many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ is coming in the flesh. That's the Gnostic issue. Jesus is not coming in the flesh. He only seemed to be a human being. These people are deceivers. He goes on, any such person, end of verse 7, is the deceiver, and he is the Antichrist. It's very strong language. So John, who is the apostle of love, is also speaking here about truth and discernment. And there will come times when you have to say to someone, you're wrong, or you're deceiving us, or that's heresy. And he goes even further in this atmosphere of hospitality that the early church has. He says, watch out, do not even allow such a person to be with you. Don't entertain such people. Don't let them into your house or even welcome them. So we have to be discerning. And this is what John is saying. If someone comes and they preach a false gospel, if they say, no, there's another way to get to heaven apart from Jesus, well, then you are justified in using strong language and saying, well, I think you're a deceiver. I think you're a liar. That's not what my Bible teaches me. There is a place for strong language. I don't know if you've had my experience. Just early in the week, I was in my study and the phone went and picked it up and someone said, hello, I'm from Microsoft Windows. And you have a problem in your computer. Has anyone had that phone call? A few of you have had that phone call. I've had it a number of times. And basically what's going on here, and it's usually an Indian, nothing against Indians, but they do tend to be Indian on the end of the phone. So I'm from Microsoft Windows. You have a problem in your computer. Now, basically, they are fraudsters. If someone begins that conversation, put the phone down immediately, because what they're trying to do is deceive you. They're trying to get their way into remote control of your computer, because Windows will never phone you on spec. And what they're trying to do is to get into your computer, to get control of your computer in such a way either that they will unlock it after you've paid them £300, or else to get into your accounts and to take even more money out. So I've had these calls over a number of times. Now, I'm a nice person in general. And I'm a Christian. But once or twice I've either played these guys along, or else I just put the phone down immediately, or as I did the other day, I say, oh, it sounds like you're a fraudster, and I put the phone down. What I actually would have loved to say is that you're a scumbag, and you're a robber, and you're a liar, and you're going to hell. And I will, and I probably will say that someday, just to see what they say. But that's basically what you're dealing with. You're dealing with people who are out to deceive you, to lie to you, and to steal from you. That, in effect, is what they are. And the Apostle John here in his letter is effectively saying to there are people out there, and they're trying to deceive you, to undermine Jesus Christ as the only Savior of the world. And they're trying to get you to go with the flow of the culture, which is Gnostic, and you are not to give them house room. You are not to invite them in. You are not to entertain them, because your very salvation is at stake. That's how serious this is. Okay, so that's what John is saying here. So he calls them deceivers. He says they are the Antichrist. Watch out for such. It's not easy sometimes to tell who they are. One of the things that we can be guaranteed is that where the church is prospering, Satan will try and sow deceit and lies and discord and various things. There's a whole kind of armory there. But in this particular case, he's trying to sow false teaching into this growing church environment. And so we as Christians have got to be discerning, we've got to test the spirits, as the Bible says, and we have got to work out what is right and what is wrong. Keep going back to our Bibles and keep testing what we're being told. And it actually is to be loving to be discerning. It actually is to be loving to keep coming back to the truth. And yet, in the church, it is difficult. It is difficult for elders. It is difficult for ministers. It is difficult sometimes to exercise discipline and to try and speak into someone's situation and say, you're going the wrong way, you're following the wrong teaching here. But actually, it's being loving, because you're wanting to protect them and care for them and help them. And John felt this. He felt this strongly. I want to protect you. I want to help you to believe the right things. But sometimes in the name of love, or in the name of progress, or in the name of being relevant, or in the name of contextualization, or in the name of mission, we can allow false teaching in. In verse 9, John says, anyone who runs ahead and does not continue in the teaching of Christ does not have God. Whoever continues in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. Anyone who runs ahead. I'm sure you've heard this phrase, he's got ahead of himself. And John says what can happen is that we can get ahead of God. We can even outrun God because we want to be progressive. We want to be the head of the pack. We want to be contemporary. We want to reach the culture. And we end up outrunning God. But you can't outrun God unless you're running in the wrong direction. And this is a very dangerous place to be. And what these people were was they were running ahead of Jesus. We should either be alongside Jesus or following Jesus, but we should never be ahead of Jesus. And the Gnostics were so far away from Jesus that they were in a very dangerous place. In my experience, sadly, people are running ahead of Jesus. They're running ahead of the church because they want to, maybe out of the best will in the world, they want to try and reach more people, try and change the gospel to be more palatable. But in effect, what they do is they undermine the gospel. In certain areas of Africa, there's a huge problem at the minute with the health and wealth gospel. It's more or less saying, you know, become a Christian and you'll never get sick. Become a Christian and you'll be prosperous. And what that does is it undermines Jesus, it takes Jesus away, and it brings the glory onto us and the glory onto being healthy and wealthy. And then when you're not healthy, and if you're not wealthy, well then you throw out the gospel, you throw out Jesus. So I was meant to be healthy and wealthy. And that certainly is a huge issue in Africa at the minute, but it's not only there, it's here also in some churches. But what's happening is that we can run ahead of Jesus. So binding together, holding together love and truth. This is what John was trying to do. If John was writing today, and if he was to put together a thumbnail sketch of danger signs to look out for, characteristics of people who are running ahead of Jesus. Here, I think, is some of the things they might say to beware of. A person who refuses to become a member of a church. A person who is unwilling to be accountable to anyone. A person who is always moving around church fellowships and isn't rooted and committed. A person who's always making extravagant claims or giving very vague words of knowledge claiming that God has spoken. A person with a strong personality. A person who is always seeking new teaching, feels the Bible isn't enough. A person who speaks love language much more than they speak truth language. A person who speaks truth language much more than they speak love language. And of course we can all be guilty of that. A person who plays down the cross. A person who always has a personal hotline to God and no one else can question them. Now, some or all of these, any one of us can be, but in my experience, when I see a number of these boxes being ticked, I start to get worried. I have seen aspects over the years of people with these different aspects together who won't submit to the leadership, who keep moving around churches, who claim to have a personal hotline to God, who will not listen to the church. And sometimes there comes a point where you've got to say, I believe you're wrong. I believe you're running ahead of Jesus and you're moving outside orthodox Christian truth. And in love, I'm passing that on. Walk in truth and walk in love. It's one of the most difficult things for us to do. It's very difficult in the church. But we have to do it. So just as we come to a close this evening, think about the week that lies ahead for you. Think about maybe how you need to be more loving. Maybe you've been all truth, 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 and you need more love. Or maybe you've been all love, 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 and you've been afraid of speaking the truth to someone. Truth and love. It's very difficult, isn't it? And I continue to struggle with this tension. Do pray for the eldership, leaders, as they try and hold this tension together. Walking in truth and walking in love. Let's just take a moment just of silence, just to pray and to ask God by His Spirit to speak to us on this. Let's just be still. Respond to God's word as the Spirit leads. Father, we thank you for your word. Your word is truth. Your word is love. Your word was made flesh in Jesus Christ who held together supremely that lovely balance of grace, love, truth. And sometimes he spoke strong words, rebuking words to those whose doctrine was wrong, whose practice was wrong, whose hearts were hard. And then sometimes he spoke words of love because love was what was needed, because someone was hurting, even in their sin. Lord, give us this week that balance of love and truth. Season our conversation. Guide us so that we honor you, we glorify Jesus, we make a difference in other people's lives, and they see God in us, the hope of glory.